Welcome to the Dr. April Jasper Show, relevant conversations for business owners of today.
If you suffer from dry, scratchy, irritated eyes, the problem may actually stem from your eyelids. Cleansing eyelids daily is essential for maintaining healthy eyes, which is why doctors recommend OcuSoft Lid Scrub Allergy Eyelid Cleanser. New OcuSoft Lid Scrub Allergy removes oil, pollen, and other contaminants from your eyelids to effectively reduce redness, irritation, and itching caused by seasonal allergies. These pre-moistened wipes are easy to use, on the go, or at home. Simply wipe and leave on. As the industry standard of care, OcuSoft has a full line of eyelid cleansers for various conditions. Available through eye care professionals, most retail outlets, and Amazon.com. Visit OcuSoft.com for more details.
Hi everyone, I'm Dr. April Jasper, and I'm here with the famous or infamous Dr. Nathan Radcliffe. So, Nate, I mean, I know that you practice here. You are well known for your expertise in the world of glaucoma, cataracts as well. Mm-hmm. But what I really want to hear about is New York City. No, tell us about your practice here, how things are going, and then we'll talk a little bit about corneal hysteresis, which you are also the expert in.
Yes. Well, thank you. It's great to be here. And yep, we're in my hometown of New York City. I did my training here, started my career in academics at Cornell and even NYU, leading the glaucoma service and teaching and doing research. And then I fell in love with taking care of the real tough glaucoma, which we find in the Bronx and in Queens. And so now I'm at Mount Sinai, but I'm mostly in private practice. And, you know, I'm a worker bee. I just see a lot of glaucoma patients, and they teach me something about glaucoma with each encounter. And it's challenging, but rewarding.
So one of the things I'm sure that you have been challenged with, as everybody is, which I love that you are doing the research to try to help us all, is figuring out what we can do better and more information we can grab and get and help us make those decisions in glaucoma. So how has corneal hysteresis, as measured by the ocular response analyzer, been of help? And by the way, you've done some research on this, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so corneal hysteresis is my favorite glaucoma rabbit hole. And you know, glaucoma is a mysterious disease. There's a lot we obviously don't know about it. And when I found out about hysteresis, which was through another doctor in New York City, Mitsugu Shimyo, who was doing some research, I was immediately fascinated. I've always been interested in corneal thickness, which is sort of the grandfather of hysteresis, if you will. And, you know, this concept that the pressure isn't really a definitive thing. It's some information, but it's incomplete information. And the question, since we check the pressure on every patient and we tend to obsess over it, is what's the context of this pressure? How much do I need to be worried about it? IOP values are very tangible. We probably overreact to them. And hysteresis is the key to really understanding what a pressure means for a given patient.
I love it. So in essence, it means if you know the corneal hysteresis, you don't have to be so stressed out about the high pressures and maybe be a little more stressed out about a low pressure.
Yes, exactly. So getting hysteresis right, and I'll give you a definition here in a moment, but getting it right will help you stop over-treating people who need to be left alone more, and it'll help you pull some people in who you should be more concerned about. And usually in both those cases, the pressure isn't giving you the full story. So hysteresis is a biomechanical property of the cornea. One way to think of it is it tells you how much pressure-related stress an eye is experiencing. Right now, we all know people who maybe their life doesn't seem that stressful to us, but they're stressed out. Okay, that's like an eye with low hysteresis. Right, it's just not handling the pressure very well, and it will get worse. It'll get nerve damage, maybe because that eye can't absorb pressure and stress very well. It doesn't, you know, they experience it all. High hysteresis, you know, is that eye that really can handle high pressures. It's built tough. It can absorb stress rather than put all the stress into the optic nerve and lose vision. You can use a shock absorber analogy. You know, when you're driving down the road, you have great shock absorbers. The road could be bumpy, but you're doing just fine. You're comfortable. Think of yourself as the optic nerve in that eye, and the shock absorbers are the hysteresis. Good shock absorbers, high hysteresis, smooth sailing. Bad shock absorbers, bumpy ride, nerve damage. And one final way to think of hysteresis is it's what corneal thickness has always tried to pretend to be. So, you know, we'll say, hey, you know, you have a high corneal thickness, so your pressure isn't as high as it reads with Goldman tonometer. Well, that's a high hysteresis, really. Thickness is an approximation of hysteresis. In fact, whenever you compare corneal thickness and hysteresis, hysteresis does a better job of really allowing us to kind of contextualize the pressure and understand it better.
Okay, so do you have to still have corneal thickness?
Yeah, this is a great question. I still get it.
Okay.
And, you know, habits are tough to break. And, you know, in glaucoma, since we're, you know, sort of just trying to understand as much as we can, it's tough to give up any information. But I will say that if the hysteresis and the thickness are telling me two different things, if I have an eye with a thick cornea and a low hysteresis, I treat that patient as if their pressure is higher than it's being measured. So in other words, I go with a hysteresis when the two are in conflict. And in fact, those are some of the cases where the hysteresis is really incredibly valuable, because you can imagine someone who has a thick cornea and you're thinking, oh, I'll let them ride with a pressure 22. It's going to be smooth sailing. And then you learn their corneal hysteresis is low. Ooh, they're higher risk and their pressure is higher than I'm measuring. I need to be more aggressive with this person.
So maybe we should tell everybody what is high corneal hysteresis and what is low.
So, you know, it's measured with the ocular response analyzer, and the normal hysteresis is 10, so that's an easy number. And I tend to say 12 is high, 8 is low. And, of course, just as you have these intermediate values with corneal thickness, a 9 and 11 are a little bit off in one way or the other. You know, but you know, the research is pretty compelling. People with a corneal hysteresis of 12 do so much better in terms of visual field progression over time. In a study I did looking at the optic nerve progression, having a high hysteresis, you know, those patients' nerves weren't progressing over a 3 or 4 year period. And the low hysteresis patients were the ones with all the nerve change. They're the ones with the rapid visual field progression. So it can really help you just, you know, understand which patients you need to treat a little more aggressively, follow up more, get more fields on. Because if you look for the progression, more OCTs, you're going to find it with low hysteresis.
So maybe give us an example of a patient that this has made a difference in your treatment paradigm or whatever you've done, decided to do for that patient. Because I think, and maybe answer this as well, if you would, Nate, there are some doctors who still don't believe this is real or important.
Yep.
So maybe address that and tell us, go ahead, get passionate.
Yeah. So, you know, this is one of the most puzzling things because, you know, it's the best risk factor for glaucoma progression that we have. In any study where you compare age, race, and let me just take a second on race, corneal hysteresis varies, and you know it's lowest in African Americans, then it's a little low in Hispanics, and it's highest in whites.
Wow.
And when you calculate the corneal hysteresis in any study, you no longer need to look at the race. In fact, so when someone says, "Hey, this is African American," and yada yada. And you're thinking, well, higher risk, African-American, you could actually just forget about that information, look at their hysteresis. Yep. If it's normal, you don't have to say they're higher risk, but on average, they will have the lower hysteresis. So, you know, it unlocks a lot of these things we've known about glaucoma, you know, and in fact, if you have a low hysteresis and nothing else is abnormal about your eye, you're more of a glaucoma suspect than someone with a 0.7. You know, and so you know, these are the patients need to start being followed. So it can be a screening tool.
Yep.
You could just measure this for people who come into your practice and just, you know, start looking after the ones, getting testing on the ones with low hysteresis. Same thing, too. Someone has a high pressure but a very high hysteresis. Breathe a sigh of relief.
Yep.
Go ahead and do some testing, but you know, probably not going to need to treat or over-follow that patient.
Wow.
So here's like a great patient example is, you know, we all know that supposedly having a thick cornea decreases your risk of progression and the pressures aren't as meaningful. You know, however, we've also all seen those patients with a thick cornea and then they have nerve damage and you're thinking, well, what is this? You know, why? I thought a thick cornea was great. And now what do I do with their pressure? Because I was going to tell myself not to worry about this pressure, you know, of 22 or 20, given their thick cornea. But I'm looking at their nerve and thinking, well, something's not working here. We all had those patients, scratched our heads, kind of did what we thought was best. And then when the ocular response analyzer became available, I started measuring hysteresis in those patients. oh, these are the people with thick corneas but low hysteresis, and that kind of explains. Again, it tells us that that eye is experiencing pressure-related stress, it is accumulating nerve damage, and I need to be aggressive, I probably need more than one therapy. Sometimes those are people who look controlled on latanoprost, and you're like, I'm just going to add laser as just a safety net because I know, you know, we need to be more cautious.
We are excited to have CooperVision as a sponsor of our podcast. CooperVision is one of the world's leading contact lens manufacturers, and they serve eye care professionals and patients in over 130 countries. Their innovative products help millions of patients see every single day. One of the technologies and innovations that we love the most about CooperVision is their groundbreaking technology in soft contact lenses that helps to slow the progression of myopia in children 8 to 12 years old at the initiation of treatment.
That's so powerful. What about the fact that the ocular response analyzer, it measures corneal hysteresis, and I've seen videos of you showing how easy it is to even capture your
own. Yeah, I can measure
own.
Myself. Yeah.
I love it. Go check out that YouTube video. Yeah. But what about the IOPCC and the whole concept of using it just to measure your pressure instead of the Goldman? What do you
yep.
think of that?
So
I like to bring up all the trouble questions.
No, yeah, I love this question and number of ways to answer it. So number one is we know that you don't really do that well if you adjust your Goldman applanation value for the corneal thickness. And the reason is because on average, people with a thicker cornea do have lower pressures. You know, we know that that's not always true for every patient. Well, what the hysteresis can help you do is take an IOP measurement obtained by the ocular response analyzer, adjust it for the corneal hysteresis, and then give you what they call corneal compensated intraocular pressure. And the way I think of it is like this. When you use a Goldman tonometer on a patient, you say, okay, what was their pressure? And it basically says, well, I'll tell you their pressure, but I'm just going to blend their corneal thickness information in with that number, but I'm not going to tell you which is which. And, you know, it's confounded. It's the exact example of a confound. But the corneal compensated pressure is adjusted for the hysteresis. And, in fact, it takes out that confounding information about corneal thickness and how stiff the cornea is, how flexible it is, and it just gives you the pure pressure measurement.
Yeah.
Where this comes in handy is, again, okay, we have a patient, their pressure's 22, maybe they have a thick cornea, and we measure the pressure, we start them on a drop, we want to see how much the pressure came down. Well, that Goldman tonometer both times is going to give you a little bit of their pressure and a little bit of their corneal thickness.
Right.
And so you don't know how much the pressure really came down because that corneal thickness is in both measurements. Well, the corneal compensated IOP gets that out of there. So, you know, what you find is that, you know, if you use latanoprost in a thick cornea patient, their pressure doesn't drop that much because of that confound. And it looks like it drops a lot in the low hysteresis patient. When you get all that out with corneal compensated IOP, you find most people are responding about the same, around 25% or so with latanoprost. So now you know what you're dealing with. You know if your therapy is working, and you can kind of move forward, you know, with better information.
So does that then mean that you measure and use that IOP measurement on your patients as a regular measurement?
Yeah, I use both. So I still, okay. And the ocular response analyzer gives you something it calls the Goldman correlated IOP.
And I heard a giggle though.
Yeah, what they actually had to do is they were getting the right pressure with corneal compensated IOP, and then they had to kind of like mess it up a little bit to match Goldman. I mean, they had to fudge it in a way that's, but it's what we've all grown up with.
Right.
It's what we've all known. So you've been taking care of someone for 10 years and you're switching to the ocular response analyzer. You can use that IOPG. And I will tell you, it works so well as a substitute for Goldman. But I often don't check Goldman in my practice. So I have a bunch of these machines in all my offices, you know, in the era of the tech shortage, it's an automated pressure.
Yes.
You know, I always say my ocular response analyzer never just wrote 16 because it was being lazy and is think of quitting their job next week.
Right.
Probably all had some employees who, you know, are kind of phoning it in, or patients being difficult and they just are like, I can't get a good measurement, but it was 16 last time. Humans are humans. Machines are going to give you a real number. And the objectivity of the pressure measurement, the reliability, I'm more comfortable with that. I'm more comfortable operating on someone based on a value
That's
obtained
cool.
with this machine than something that came from, you know, even a well-trained, you know, employee.
No, I hear what you're saying. Yep. And it's no knock on anybody. We've all been in that place. And you want to be able to streamline it for your employees, your staff, and know that you've got the most accurate measurements. I respect that. I love that.
I have made a push that all pharma studies should be using this. Because, you know, you think about people, oh, I don't know about that measurement. Yep. You know, these companies, A, I don't really believe that. B, the investigators are all trying to be objective. But it is also true that if it's just a computer measuring the pressure, it's kind of hard to get in there and fudge those numbers. So, you know, I've always argued that we should be using this. And it's also, you know, you get decimal points. You know, you say 10.5, you don't really get that with Goldman. And when you start doing big studies with lots of data, that little extra significant figure is going to help you just, you know, get more precise data. I found that in maybe 5 of my studies at Cornell where I had my Goldman pressure measurements and the ocular response analyzer. The data was always cleaner, more reliable, more statistically significant when I was using the ORA.
So then that makes us all wonder, and I know I joked about the fact that I've seen video of you taking your own measurement. Mm. Is it really that simple?
Is
it easy?
Yeah, it's easy. It's an air puff. Patients are afraid of the air puff, but that was the technology where it used to blow too much air into the cornea. And so, like, you know, it would go like 60 millimeters of air puff.
That's what they were afraid of.
It was too much. And so this modern technology is actually monitoring the corneal indentation as it ramps up the pulse. Once the cornea indents, it stops pushing air. And so it's a much friendlier measurement and, you know, it's fine.
And it's easy for your teams, new employees to learn, right?
And it pretty much measures it itself. You just have to place the patient in the machine. It takes the measurement.
Okay. So, yeah, so then what do you tell us and the people that are listening and watching today? Which numbers do you write down? So you take a patient, you take their measurements. What are you writing in the chart?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, you know, I'll take the, I like the hysteresis and, you know, but we're all doing the same thing. You're taking the hysteresis and the Goldman pressure and you're coming up with, you know, where you think this patient's pressure really is. So, you know, my typical note might be patient, you know, with mild glaucoma, IOP 18 on latanoprost. However, high hysteresis, lower risk, we'll monitor patient, you know, at a pressure of 18 and look for progression. Okay. Or, you know, pressure's 14. However, you know, patient has low hysteresis, meaningful visual field loss. I'm going to add adjunctive agent to target a pressure of 10 given low hysteresis and higher risk.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. So Dr. Radcliffe, it's funny because I've told the team at Rikert, I really have no understanding as to why everybody in the world doesn't have this technology. What is wrong? Like, why do others not get it? And I'm not critical. Everybody knows that listens to this, that this is all about inspiring and educating our colleagues. What would you say to them as to what they should be thinking and doing in adopting this technology to be able to better help their patients with glaucoma?
Yeah, so, you know, I agree, and I've seen this across everything, surgical glaucoma, lasers, medication. You know, we all are heavily rooted in our training. And, you know, NYU, when I did my residency in this great city, wasn't using the technology. I found out about it after I finished my training. But I do think it's the case that you can't just stay with what you were trained. And in fact, you know, I say in the operating room, if I'm not doing something that's new or evolving every 2 months, I'm definitely slipping behind the way innovation is going. It's the same with our diagnostics. You know, many of us did some level of training without OCT. And I mean, would you ever do that today? I mean, I get an OCT on everyone. I don't care if it's getting paid for. This is perfectly analogous to OCT, meaning it gives you the best information that is much deeper than Goldman applanation tonometry. It helps you manage patients better. It helps you avoid over-treating and torturing your patients who don't need it. It helps you quickly get to the ones who are in real trouble. Your quality of life taking care of people will be better with this technology because you will be less stressed knowing you have a better handle on the disease. And that's priceless. So it's definitely worth looking into. And it's also attainable. And it's something that's, you know, it's not cost prohibitive. It can be brought into a practice, you know, very easily.
You are amazing. Funny, too. Thank you for bringing the humor to this today. And for those of you that don't know Dr. Radcliffe, look him up. He's got some videos out there that kind of walk through this. But read his papers. Over 50 peer-reviewed. papers, incredible, and he's a worker bee. I love that. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you. It was great to have this discussion with you and to spend some time with you.
Your eyes and your vision are under attack. Damaging blue light from the sun, your phone, your computer, your tablet, even light bulbs and car headlights is constantly bombarding you. The good news is our eyes actually already have a line of defense to counter the effects of blue light. This defense is made up of three pigments called carotenoids. MacuHealth with MicroMicell, the only supplement with the exclusive patent on all three macular carotenoids and MicroMicell technology.